Tennessee just showed up. So if you want to.
Okay, there he is.
We are live and rolling.
Okay, welcome to the regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting. This is Tuesday, September 15th, 2020, and it's around 6 p.m., and we're coming to you on our favorite, on your neighborhood computer here. So we have a full complement of commissioners. So we have, we have a quorum and call the meeting to order. Are there any commissioner announcements? Anybody wish to have anything to say? Okay. So at this point, I'll open up the meeting for public comment. This is typically the time that's reserved for the consent calendar or items that are not on the agenda. And Scott will be sharing his screen that has the contact information on. So if you wish to speak to the commission on public comment, now is your time. So Anthony, do we have anybody sitting in the queue?
At this point, Chair, I do not see any hands raised.
Okay, going. Gone. Okay, we'll close the public comment period and move on to the consent calendar. This is item A1. It's the current and advanced planning and processing list and the recommendation to receive and file. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items or have any questions for staff? Okay, do we have a motion?
I move we accept the consent agenda.
Second.
So we have a motion and a second. Any discussion? Okay, seeing none. Scott, would you like to call a question, please?
Certainly. Commissioner Lucas?
Aye.
Commissioner Barone?
Aye.
Mr. Stewart?
Yes.
Commissioner Ngrafia?
Aye.
Chair Lohr?
Yes.
Motion passes 5-0. Thank you.
Okay, great. We're moving right on here. We'll be moving into public hearings. This is item B1. This is case number MAJ19-005. It's a major modification to the CUP 440 and CDP 500. And this is the located at 3300 Panorama Drive in Morro Bay. Do we have any ex parte communication that anybody would like to share? No case. None seen. And then I guess we'll move into the staff report.
All right, here we go.
We up and ready?
Yep.
All right, Nancy.
Okay, not quite as ready. It said that the host is not allowing me to share screen.
Okay. So, Anthony, do you have a technological fix for that?
And go ahead and please repeat that.
I'm trying to share my screen, and it's prohibiting me.
We will go like this. Just a moment. Let's check here. You should be able to bring up your screen now.
Okay, thank you. Not quite what I wanted.
If you hit F5, it should go to full screen.
How's that?
There we go. That's full
screen. All right. This is a major modification to the existing permits at 3300 Panorama. And this is not part of today's project that we're making a decision on, but I wanted to give you a little history of where we've been for the last few years. So this is kind of a rough timeline on the tank removal project summary. CUP and CDP were issued in June 2018. The building permit followed about a month later in September 2018. They started the work and reached substantial completion around December 2018. And December through April, they were waiting for authorization to remove the waste bins from the site that contained the lead hazardous materials. SLO County Environmental Health provided their final on February 2020. The tree mitigation planting was completed on August 3rd, 2020, and the City of Morro Bay issued their final on the permit August 10th, 2020. Now, this is the subject property. This previously was a permit, a minor modification to the original CUP and CDP to remove three sheds and three fire hydrants from the property that were not part of the original scope. The permit for the minor modification was approved and issued February 14th, 2019. It was appealed on February 25th, 2019. The non-permitted shed removal occurred somewhere around February 27th, 28th, 2019. Air Pollution Control District and SLO County Environmental Health both issued a notice of violation related to the shed removal, and they issued those in March 2019. APCD satisfied and removed their notice of violation in March 2019. Planning Commission upheld the appeal on May 7th, 2019 and requested submittal of a major modification permit request to cover the after the fact shed and fire hydrant removal. The applicant submitted their major modification permit request October 2019. SLO County Environmental Health removed their notice of violation on March 2020. Major modification permit application for the after the fact shed removal and the new scope, which is siding removal and replacement on the electrical transformer building, was deemed complete August 2020. And here we are at the hearing, September 15th, 2020. The scope of work subject to this major modification permit is the after the fact removal of the sheds without permits, and the new scope of work, which was requested by Planning Commission and the public in the previous appeal hearing, was to remove the hazardous siding and replace it with metal siding on the electrical and transformer building. The after the fact approval of work performed without a permit was the three sheds used formerly to store fire hoses were removed in February 2019. A fire hydrant was next to each shed connected to a private water source. The sheds were constructed of steel framing with galvanized steel siding coated with asbestos felt and lead-based paint, similar to a product called Galbestos. The siding replacement, which is the new scope of work for the electrical transformer building, includes removal of the asbestos-containing siding and replace with metal siding. Method of removal is encapsulate, using the wet system for any cutting, using shears or snips only. Project oversight and monitoring will be by industrial hygienist Michael Tiffany. And for the portion of the building in the ESH 50-foot setback area, the monitoring and mitigation plan from the originally approved 2018 MND requires a biologist investigation prior to demo to ensure that no species habitat will be disturbed. The after-fact approval of the fire hydrant removal. The fire hydrants were removed by the primary tank removal contract in fall 2018 when the private water tank and related water lines to the hydrants were removed. He thought it was part of the scope of the work because he was removing the source, and to leave fire hydrants on the site that were not connected to a water source seemed irresponsible. After the fact permit requirements, once we were notified of the violation, we posted a stop work order on the site. We also requested and received the following reports: qualifications of the contractor who removed the sheds, confirmation of the disposal site that received the shed materials, confirmation of the method used for removal of the sheds. There was a visual examination and testing done by an analytical consulting group in the area of the shed removal. And we received a report from the biologist confirming the condition of the ESHA and no negative impacts on nesting birds from the work. And we received documentation from Air Pollution Control District and SLO County Environmental Health confirming satisfactory resolution of their notice of violations previously issued. So that is a summary of the work, and the city planning staff recommendation is for conditional approval of MAJ 19-005 by adopting resolution 14-20. And that's it.
Okay, thank you, Nancy.
You're welcome.
Do we have any questions for staff? Okay, Jesse.
Nancy, did it seem likely that it was a error in good faith?
That's really a judgment. I mean, we ask for documentation on why it occurred from the owners, and we ask for documentation from the contractor who did the work. We've received all of that. It's hard for me to tell whether the documentation is a sincere feeling or not. It's certainly plausible
that they thought they had permission to demo this.
I mean, I think there are people that are confused about planning permits versus building permits.
Okay.
Joe?
Yeah, I had a question. You know, I'm assuming that the contractor that removed the hydrants is familiar with that kind of work and ESHA designations. Was there anything in the permit that would have led someone to believe that you could intrude into the ESHA to remove something?
I don't think he ever saw the permit. I think he was under the impression this was a small scope of work and it didn't need a permit. If he had seen the permit, I don't think he would have done the work.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Nancy, was there any way to quantify or to verify that the siding was moved, was encapsulated and removed in the appropriate manner, other than the wording and the wording of the contractor?
It was done differently than what we had expected, but it was done in conformance with the requirements in the county environmental health. And the APCD are satisfied, and the contractor was more than qualified to do this type of work.
Did he verify it in any way with video or photographic evidence that that he encapsulated the material before he removed it, or did he? Was there video?
No, I mean, I think hindsight would have been great, and he probably wished he had videoed it, but he didn't because he thought he was doing something that didn't require a permit, and he was given instructions from the owners.
And he's a licensed asbestos abatement contractor?
Yes.
And he didn't think that a permit was required?
He explained in a letter to me that because the sheds were bolted to a foundation, that he didn't consider them a building, and there are different requirements if there's something that might be considered personal property.
Okay. Essentially all buildings are bolted down. You have a, all buildings are bolted to a sill plate. And the sill plate is bolted to the foundation, so it doesn't, unless it had wheels on it, it doesn't seem like it would fit into a different category. But okay, do we have any other questions for staff? Okay, then at this point I'll open up. Thank you, Nancy.
Can I have one more real quick?
Sure.
I don't know if it'll be appropriate to ask this later, so let me get this out. Alternatives here. So without commenting, what would be the alternative to approving this today? Obviously denying it, but what happens if that is the case?
I'm not sure what you would accomplish. The work that everyone is disturbed about is done. And the agencies that are involved have satisfied themselves that it was done without a permit, but it was done correctly. And we have conditioned the approval today to require a full site assessment. So visual and soil sampling to see if there is any remaining lead paint materials on the site and get that cleaned up. So that is a condition, and that is what the Planning Commission talked about requesting back in May 2019. So I'm not sure we could continue to deny this, but the work that people don't like is done.
I get that. I'm sorry. It was more just a general question. I mean, what would be the alternative to approval? So it doesn't sound like it's a good one.
Well, let me ask another question there in that same vein a little bit, Nancy, then. Do we have any, is there any way that we can recommend fines or penalties for this work that's being done once again without permits? And then also is, I lost my thread there. So do we have any, the thread was, have we been fully reimbursed as a city for staff time and for the cost of remedying their not following the rules?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And I think Scott had covered the code enforcement penalties, and the City of Morro Bay's penalties are pretty small. I think the owners and the contractors, in my opinion, have been through the ringer for the last year and a half to try to meet all of the requirements that we've put them through, including what they had to go through to get out of the notice of violations with the county and the air pollution control district. So it seems to me that a delay of a year and a half is probably worth more than any penalty that the City of Morro Bay would be authorized to charge.
Okay, great. Okay, any further questions from the commission? Okay, Joseph? You're muted, I think, Joseph. Okay.
Given all the series of things that have happened in the course of this property being developed, I'm just wondering if there was some sort of additional occurrence sometime in the future where something is through a misunderstanding or just an honest error is done without a permit. What are the remedies, and do those remedies escalate given that there have been errors in the past?
We do have a fine structure that increases over time based on the number of occurrences, depending on the time frame under which those violations would occur. So, yeah, we do have a fine structure in our fee schedule and in the municipal code.
Any idea, I'm not asking you to quote or anything, but I mean, is it $100? Is it
$5? Yeah, it's like that.
They're rather low.
Yes, correct.
And that's it. There are no other remedies, just aside from fairly.
We have depending on what the violation is, we also have the ability to charge double the permit fees and those types of things on the building side of things. So, again, it sort of depends on what the violation is.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you. At this time, we'll open it up for public comment. We'll have 3 minutes for the public to make a statement or comment upon the
We have project representatives, Nancy. I see a few folks in there.
Yes, we have Michael Tiffany and I believe a representative or two from the owner, and I believe also a representative from the contractor that will be doing the new scope of work, removing the siding.
Okay, thanks, Scott. That's typically how we do it.
So Nancy, if you look at the, I think we probably need to promote them up maybe.
So Michael Tiffany.
Okay.
Let's see if I can.
I'll promote him. Just give me a second. Michael Alper, that one?
Yes. And Edward Galagos.
Okay.
And I think that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Michael. Mr. Tiffany, if you'd like to. Who would like to give their first presentation? Mr. Tiffany or Mr. Alper?
Or Edward.
I'll take it. Nancy presented basically the procedure by which they're going to remove the siding. So if you have any questions, I can answer them. But basically, the building has this corrugated siding on it, which is galvanized metal with an asbestos coating, which is then coated with paint. And it's somewhat deteriorated. It's not really friable at any point, but we're going to have the contractor encapsulate it, which will prevent any friability during the removal of the panels. And then we're going to basically unscrew the panels from the building and put them in a bin and wrap it up and haul it away. We'll clean up any residues, and then the building will be clean and they will install new siding. Not all of the siding on the building is galbestos. The side of the carport and the roof sheeting are non-asbestos, and they're going to stay. It's basically just the sides of the original electrical building. And it's a pretty straightforward project. They're going to remove some conduit and other things on the interior of the building for access to the panels. We're going to do perimeter air monitoring. We're going to do observation, make sure that they're following the protocols, encapsulating the material, and so on. We'll ask Michael Alper how long it'll take. I think it's going to be 2 or 3 days at the most. Beyond that, any questions you have, go ahead.
Okay, I think we'll hear all of them. The rest of the public comment, and then we'll come back for questions. So who would like to speak next as far as the applicant?
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Hi, Edward Gallegos here. Mr. Soli, Steve Gallegos, the two other owners. I just want to let you know that we really appreciate your time and your efforts. And Nancy, thank you so much for your patience and all the hard work that you've put into it, and even given us direction when we needed some direction. We've worked extremely hard over the last year, especially to meet all the requirements and to satisfy all the different agencies. And I think now that I'm a part of the project, understanding the process of developing and building and respecting the process, and also having the patience to proceed in that process, I believe that moving forward is not going to be as harmful as it was in the past. So again, we've worked really hard to satisfy all agencies and departments that are included in this. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Next, please.
Good evening. My name is Michael Alper. I'm the branch manager for Alliance Environmental Group. I'm responsible for our Central Coast operations. I'm happy to answer any questions. Just a quick background about our company to assuage any concerns or questions that might be out there. We were not involved in any of these prior projects that you were discussing previously. In fact, I was unaware of them up until just relatively recently. So we come in with a whole fresh look and fresh approach and hopefully a fresh view from the city and the community as well. Our company's been in business 26 years. We operate in three states currently. Within California, we're licensed contractors for all the appropriate licensures, including the asbestos DOSH certificate. We're also Department of Toxic Substance Control, hazardous waste haulers. So we have all the appropriate certifications and license and insurances that are generally required in the industry. We've worked with SLO APCD to provide them with notification as required for the work that's going to happen. And they've approved our notification. The work is scheduled to start on Monday morning. We'll be working during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 8 till approximately 4 or 5. A little dependent on the weather. Hopefully the wind doesn't kick up too much. Just makes it harder for us to work in an outdoor environment. And we expect the project will take about 5 days to finish, in deference to Michael Tiffany's statement earlier. We budgeted for that. Quite candidly, we don't know how easily the screws are going to come out that hold these panels in place. We'll know better, you know, as we get into the project. But, you know, barring any unforeseen difficulties with that, we don't expect any problems. The area will be protected and, you know, you'll have your industrial hygienist will be on site supervising the work and confirming that we've done everything according to the work plan and protocols that were set in place. Our crew that's on site are certified asbestos workers. Not sure what else I can tell you is, you know, background and overview from our perspective, but happy to answer any questions that may arise.
Okay, thank you very much. At this point, we'll open it up for the rest of the public. Do we have anybody that wishing to speak? Anthony?
Chair, at this time, I do not see any raised... Oh, actually, a bunch of raised hands just came up. I do have three raised hands currently. I'll go ahead and bring up the caller with the number ending in 327. Okay, caller 327, you are live. Go ahead.
Hello, my name is Dan Sudley of Morro Bay. I was one of the appellants that appealed this wrongful removing of sheds. My first question is, why is it appropriate for the city to approve work that was done wrong retroactively? I do not understand that at all. The contractor removed the sheds in a wrongful manner. One of the sheds is clearly in an ESHA area in direct proximity to people's homes. It is well acknowledged that these sheds contained asbestos in this sensitive area of people and habitat. I have seen nothing in writing that showed that there was an environmental specialist on hand to supervise this in this very sensitive area. I have seen nothing that shows that anything was done, that it was wrapped, that it was all the things that we spent hours and hours and hours in planning commission meetings identifying exactly how things would be done. I have seen nothing in writing. I haven't seen the six reports that are listed in Nancy Hubbard's report. I haven't seen those. I read through the staff report notes, but I haven't seen any of that. So I don't know what they say, and frankly, I don't buy into the whoops. We didn't know what we were doing. Well, contractors are licensed. They're supposed to know what they're doing. They're bonded to be know in what they're doing. I don't buy the whoops factor. So I don't buy us, the city, okaying this, what was done in a wrongful manner after the fact. It's like the city is then going to be complicit in saying, well, it was okay as a whoops. Every contractor knows that they have to have a building permit. I mean, that's one of the ABCs of being a contractor. That's not calculus. It's really simple stuff. I haven't seen that there's been any more biology reports on what the bird population and other animal population is on the property and what projects are going on, if they have any bother to those animal populations or to people either, for that matter. In conclusion, I am completely disappointed in the city's response and their okaying what this contractor has done, the manner in which it was done, the non-continuing of a permit, and then wanting to say it was okay, which clearly it was not. And that was the reason for our appeal as one of the three appellants in the first place. It was clearly not okay. Furthermore, I'm not even sure that the sheds were removed during business hours, that this wasn't a sneaky event. I haven't seen any of the reports, but it looks really shaky to me. Just jerk these things off of their mountings and stick them on a truck and haul them away. So you have evidence that they were delivered. Big deal. It's the manner in which they're removed. It's the manner in which they're removed. The city should not okay this wrongful removal of sheds and endangerment of the ESHA and the endangerment of the people that live directly across one of those sheds. I am entirely opposed to what the staff report is proposing. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Can we have the next commenter?
Yes, Chair. We have Kristen Headland is the next speaker. Kristen, you are live. Go ahead.
Good evening, planning commissioners and staff. My name's Kristen Headland. I live across the street from 3300 Panorama. I've been a resident here for 30 years, so I have a great deal of history with this property. And I would have to say that for the residents, we understood that the jet fuel tanks were going to be coming down. All we asked is that they were done in a very safe manner, and that we kind of expected from the applicant and the city that what we were given in writing would actually be taking place. And so we quickly found out that it didn't really work like that. So what I want to say is that Chris Matisse, the property owner, is actually a licensed contractor. So for me, the residents around the property and I started to see a pattern of behavior that was occurring with that property that we quickly identified was of concern. So for myself, aside from the goat issues and so on, I'd like to raise the issue of the illegal cutting of six trees on the weekend by some gardening crew with no permit. That was the very first violation that we witnessed, in which nothing really occurred because the fines for violating are so minimal. But it's so what occurs is they say, oh well, I thought it was okay. So and then the next thing that occurred was the removal of these three sheds that have asbestos, and one of them sat in the ESHA, and those sheds were bolted to a concrete slab. So whoever did it knew the policies of requiring a permit, and nothing came about until we had to notify the authorities. So for myself, I want to say that all we're asking is things be done right. As soon as the project came to an end, a travel trailer was moved into the garage. Some person lived in it for a very long time. And they, during this closing period, someone cut a hole in the side of the garage to make a sewer drainage pipe. And the occupant used the garden hose to bring water in there. So I understand that the staff is asking that the owner excavate and show where the sewer line is connected. That's a concern of mine. And then also, the since they cut down those trees illegally, 14 trees were planted. And I want to know who's going to be responsible to check on these trees every month to make sure the water's working, because the owner does not live in town. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you very much for your comment. Next, please.
All right, thank you, Chair. We have Betty Winholtz is the next speaker. Just a moment. Betty, you are live.
Thank you. This is Betty Winholtz. I want to refer to a couple of points in the email that I sent you earlier. One of those had to do with the letter of confirmation from the county health department and saying that it was done, but and the outcome of their hearing that was not in the staff report. It said it would be in the staff report. Maybe you addressed this. I came in a minute late to the hearing, but I didn't hear it addressed. Will that document be made available? And I'd like to know how much the fine was that the health department issued. I believe there was a fine. And then again, for the APCD, they came out and they said that they were okay now with the violation. Was there a fine from them or not? And going along in the vein of fines, since this is an owner who continues to have violations, and yet you think each violation is minor, it's now a cumulative effect. You know, from what was said earlier, from the trees to the removal of the sheds to the person living on the property, at what point does the city or will the Planning Commission say that is enough? We have to take a stand and show this developer that we stand by our laws and our rules and our Muni code, and that this is not okay. And this is how we show that, by issuing a fine. And to downplay fines, I think, is erroneous, because I think it speaks to others to know whether or not you are serious and whether they can also get away with things. So that is my point. And then seeing that letter from the health department, which was not in the staff report, I would like to see that. Maybe I have to ask for that separately as well. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Betty. Do we have anybody else who wish to speak?
Chair, that is all. I do not see any more raised hands on the queue.
Okay, let's bring it back to the staff and to the commission. So either Nancy or Scott, would either of you like to address a couple of the items that were put forward, such as the trailer and someone living on site, the cutting of the trees, the maintenance of the trees, and the issue of fines, of the ability to fine and how much fine, what the quantity of the fines would be.
Okay, so I can cover some of the items. Dan's comment was that it didn't have any, that we don't have any monitoring in the condition. We do have monitoring in the condition, and the permit for the small scope of work that is yet to be done is subject to all of the same mitigation and monitoring requirements as the original tank removal project. So literally for them to replace siding on a building is much more involved than anyone else that was replacing siding on a building. And we are contracting with Michael Tiffany to oversee the work. Kristen talked about the tree removal. That's the tank project. And the tree removal was mitigated by having to replace more trees at a higher caliber, a 15 gallon instead of a 5 gallon. So I think that's more probably has more value to the city than a $100 fine. There is a code violation that also has nothing to do with the permit we're talking about today, and we are addressing that, and Scott might elaborate on that. We believe that the woman living in the RV was given notice to get out, and she should have been out by the end of the 31st of August.
Yeah, and my understanding is she is gone, and I believe the trailer is gone as well, and talking with the building inspector a day or two ago.
Okay, and then Betty had mentioned the missing letter that was posted on the website this morning. It was missing originally, but it is there now. APCD, I believe their fine was $1,000. And Slo County Environmental Health, I'm not aware of a fine, but their notice of violations were directly to the owner, so our information was second or third hand.
Okay, then what...
I do have one thing to add to okay. these comments. Why are we doing this? You know, why are we issuing after the fact permits? Because they're required. You do the development, whether you got a permit or not, you're required to come back through the process and get a coastal development permit, conditional use permit for the actions that you took. I mean, that's a requirement of the city's municipal code, and that's why we're here.
Okay, then what is the level of fines that we could issue or we could recommend to have issued from the city that would hope to keep this from happening again?
The Planning Commission doesn't recommend fines. It's
right.
Not a process that the Planning Commission's involved in.
Okay. And then as far as the municipal code, what is the quantity of fines, or what is the... What fines could be issued?
$100 and then $250 and then $500, I think, is the scale. Okay. Is it would follow.
Okay. All right, then I'll bring this back to the commission. Do we have any questions to the applicant? Okay. Susan, did I see your hand go up? Or okay. Okay, then I'll close public comment and bring this back to the commission for discussion. Who would like to take a whack at this?
I don't think they want to hear what I have to say.
Well,
Joseph,
go ahead.
Well, first of all, it's news to me that there has been any change in the cast of characters involved in the development of the project. And from the impression created at this meeting, I'm pleased with, you know, some additions to the cast of developers. As I said before, this is just the early part of the journey of this particular property to its ultimate development. And there's a lot of things that need to be done, and there's a lot of time stretching in front of us. I think for myself, I typically give the benefit of the doubt to the applicant when these kinds of misunderstandings and mistakes arise. But there have been so many associated with this property, it's already been stated, I don't need to go through the five or six, you know, serious things that have gone wrong. And as I say, this is just the beginning. I think at this point, if something additional should go wrong in the lengthy history or lengthy path that's still in front of us, I for one would probably suspend that benefit of the doubt, and I would start to think that the burden of proof has to be placed on the applicant. That is, his burden to prove that when a mistake occurred, it was honest and unintentional, rather than intentional to evade the permit law and evidencing a policy of better to ask forgiveness after the fact than seek permission beforehand. And I don't have to tell anybody that, you know, typically wherever the burden of proof lies, that's usually the losing argument. So, by what I read in the file, I pretty much have to conclude that despite the fact that the permit wasn't followed, probably the work was done in a safe and in safe manner and with all the restraints that, or most of the restraints that would have been part of the original permit anyway. But I really think that we ought to have some kind of strong recommendation to the city council that when there's a whole series of violations, there has to be, you know, a really strong punitive deterrent in effect, so that people just don't decide that they can simply disregard what the permit law requires and pay an insignificant fine. That's my statement.
Okay. Jesse, would you like to comment or?
I'm irritated. I'm going to be frank. I'm irritated. I'm irritated with having to do this several times. I'm irritated with a seeming lack of desire to comply. I don't know that we're given any options here. You know, I mean, from a staff perspective, it seems like we have to approve this. And I don't like that. I don't like the fact that they're doing this work without permits, continually working in the ESH without permits, that they're, you know, having somebody on site living in a trailer repeatedly. All of this doesn't sit well with me. It seems like as though our hands are tied with fines. And, I think the only option I see is denial of this major modification. So that's where I sit.
Okay, Michael.
I'm a registered architect in another state, and you know there's things about processes that are just incredibly straightforward. We're a bird city. We've got birds and trees. They're supposed to be watched after. They weren't. We have an ESHA that's a gift in this kind of built environment. It's damaged. We have a large population of folks on some of the smallest lots at the densest part of our city with asbestos and things removed illegally across the street. And then we hear things about tenants on the property. And, you know, it is this, as Ms. Winhold said, this cumulative effect. And, I believe it when I see it. When we see the reports that say the ground is not contaminated, I'll believe it. I don't believe anybody's doing anything right until I see the report that says there's nothing there. I think people should be made to remove things out of the ESHA that are there. And I think that the owner should be extremely aware that when this property moves forward for some kind of development, people will have an extremely long memory of the way the community was treated on this. That's all I've got to say.
Okay, Susan?
I don't know that I have anything more to add. It does say in the staff report that the person living in the trailer was not authorized by the owners to do so. They were trespassing. I think this is a problem we see all over our country with people who are, you know, seeking some kind of even substandard housing situation. So I can't blame them for that. And it sounds like an eviction process, which can be a challenge, that is something that they're taking care of. I do feel like spending an extra year and a half is a penalty. Time is money. They've had to do that. They've had to go through the process of clearing things with APCD, with the health department. That's money. That's time. I understand the frustration with things being done wrong. And I don't think we can ever really know the motivation, whether I don't like to believe these are evil people who are doing evil things in our town. I would rather believe that mistakes were made, that hopefully now that they know that this is a city and a community that pays very close attention, that these kinds of mistakes won't be made again. I do believe slapping a $100 fine on anybody for anything does nothing. A year and a half of time lost on this project is significant. Planting more and larger trees because trees were lost is significant. And these are helpful things for our community. And again, it's a requirement to have this permit done. So we do that. We have stipulations on the next stage of the work in terms of the removal of this siding that should protect the health of the neighborhood. And you can bet that if there is anything that is not done properly, the neighbors are going to see it. And the work would be stopped right away. So I don't really have anything more than that to add, but to hope that moving forward, we get some really good communication happening with the developers and with the neighbors, and something positive comes out of it. That's all I got.
Okay. I'll echo the previous comments. And one thing I'd like to add is I think during, you know, as we're going through and amending the general plan, I think this is one point where we really need to upgrade our thought process on this and really institute some strong and punitive conditions for people that do work without permits in this town. We have no penalty for somebody coming through and doing the work and then asking for permission later, asking for forgiveness. It just is not, you know, it's not viable. It doesn't have the effect that we would hope it would have. So as we re-review the general plan and the update, we really need to instigate a fine and penalties that really do bite. And some of that may be, you know, we give them a chance, you know, and then when they show that they cannot be trusted, then that's when there should be some definite penalties, you know, applied. And I really have a problem being a licensed contractor, general contractor, and have been for before dirt. I really have a problem with somebody saying, with a contractor saying that they were not aware that a permit was needed to do work, especially if asbestos was involved. I have a real problem with somebody saying, as an owner, telling a contractor to go do the work and then knowing that there should have been a permit, knowing that what had gone before on this project, and knowing that the community would be looking at it with an eagle eye, knowing the conditions that conditions had been violated before. So you really, you know, as the owners, you've really strained your credibility. And I wish there was more I could do to make you realize that this, you know, you need to follow the rules. We're a fairly forgiving community, but, you know, we're not to be taken advantage of. And I feel like that's what's happened here. So other than a tongue lashing, it doesn't seem like we have much recourse on this matter. And so I would like to see this project move move forward, move onward, and but Jesus, you know, let's, you know, have a clue. Just have a bloody clue. So, at this point, let's. No, we're not listening to. Public comment is over. Joseph, would you?
Yeah, I had an additional thought. You know,
could you speak up just a little bit, Joseph? I have a hard time hearing you.
Sure. You know, can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
You know, it strikes me that the permit, in its simplest meaning, is a promise on the part of an applicant to do certain things, and that if a course of actions, you know, indicates really bad faith on the part of that promiser, you know, then you can conclude that you know, that individual isn't suitable for making a promise. You know, in effect, actions of bad faith bar you from having a permit or renewing a permit. And, you know, I think that's the kind of punitive measure that we ought to be suggesting to the city council. It's not a matter of a $1,000 fine or a $5,000 fine, because, you know, we might be talking about developments that are, you know, measured in the millions. But just precluding somebody from actually being able to continue with what he wants to do because he's been so deceitful in the past.
Okay. So at this point, I think we need, does anybody else wish to speak to this, or can we move on to a motion? Okay, I'll open up for public comment for one brief comment to the applicant. So yes. Edward, Mr. Gallegos, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, listening to everybody, I just want to let you know that I personally deeply sympathize with everybody's concerns. The contractors, the planning commission, the neighborhood, just a little background. I was brought in to the project July 1st, 2019, and because there was a need for somebody to manage the project. And so as far as I'm concerned, Chris did make a huge mess. I'm not going to hold back any words. He made a mess of it. My job is to come in and like I said, I know the process. I respect the process. I respect the permit process. And so over the past year, I'm hoping Nancy, because I've worked so closely with her, would recognize and agree that we have personally done everything that we can to rectify it. And as long as I continue to manage the project, I'm going to have the utmost respect for all the agencies, the neighborhood, and the project itself. So, again, if I was a part of it a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, this wouldn't have happened. All I can say is what's happened in the past year since I've began to put all the data and everything required together to meet all the agencies and satisfy all the different departments. As far as money is concerned, you know, going down the route of the major modification has cost the company tens of thousands of dollars, not my money, but the company's money. So from a punitive standpoint, it was a real, more than anything could be issued as far as, you know, any type of penalty. But we're talking tens of thousands of dollars. So, again, I apologize for everything that was done prior to me coming on, but I'm letting you know that everything that I've done in the past year has, I've done everything to the best of my ability. So, again, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for that sentiment. You know, that is appreciated. At this point, I think we have a couple options. We can deny the permit, or we can approve the permit with conditions, or we could approve the permit as is. Does somebody wish to make a motion? Jesse? You're muted.
Sorry, yeah, I was trying to get to that. I think whatever we do today, and I'm not sure what side of the fence I'm going to be on yet, whatever we do today, we ought to stipulate that any further work without permits, any further work in violation of the ESH, any furthering of the actions that we've seen up to now would immediately, or I don't know what the word immediately, but would suspend the conditional use permit. I mean, this can't go on.
I wanted to ask Scott or Nancy, can we place conditions on that carry through past the duration of this project into the development of the parcel?
No. You can only apply conditions that apply to the project that's in front of you. You don't have any ability to condition future permits that haven't been submitted.
Can we ask for or require the ESHA be expanded?
So
that is the definition of it's in the zoning code, so it wouldn't be that. You understand what I'm saying? Like, ESHA is a definition in the zoning code, so you don't get to expand that. You could do that potentially as it relates to, you know, a future development application for the site, I would imagine. Probably not a lot of nexus between that and this project, though.
So then the ESHA was not damaged. To the expert's view and to people that viewed it right after it occurred, it's an unfortunate situation that the work was done and no one was there. And we can't go back and witness something that wasn't there, but we asked them to have a lot of studies done to confirm that no nesting birds were disturbed, that the ESHA was not disturbed. So there appears to be no damage from that work. And I really, in spite of the fact that it's hard to believe that a contractor would do work without a permit, I do think that's a very well-known qualified contractor. And I think based on observation of the site after the work was done, that they did it carefully. And we are asking for a full site assessment to look for lead and possibly take soil samples around all of the work areas, just to be safe.
Okay, Nancy or Scott, one of the things that I've seen on this project and I've seen on other projects is basically they're bringing in people, they're doing stuff illegally, then those people are gone, and the people that are left are pointing the finger back at somebody else that is no longer involved. Is there any way that we can condition this project so that in the future, if work is done that is not according to the conditions that have been established, that the owners can be held more liable so that they can't point back to somebody and said, oh, well, it was their fault. They did this without, you know, without our consent or without our knowledge.
Everything related to the project is ultimately the responsibility of the owner. So, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what you're getting at. Maybe I don't understand what you're asking for, but ultimately anything that happens out there, doesn't matter who does it, is the responsibility of the owner. It all goes back to the people that own it. I mean, it doesn't matter what the contractor does, the owner's responsible for it.
So basically, you know, if we go down the whole list, the excuses we've gotten all the way through, from the removal of the goats or the poisoning of the goats, or from the down to somebody moving a trailer on site and living there, it's always been the excuse we've been is that somebody else has been responsible for that, and the owners have always said that no, we're not responsible, somebody else has been responsible. Now the owners of, you know, the time delay, I agree, is the biggest penalty we could have imposed. And I wish there were other penalties that we could impose, but we can't. But the time delay really has been the biggest penalty that has been imposed on this project. And that is a true penalty. So it just seems to me this constantly pointing to somebody else that says it was their fault, we're not responsible, we own the property, but somebody else did it. That's what I find so offensive in this whole process. So I don't know how we could get, you know, how we can solve that, but that's what galls me the most. So I still think we need to come, we need to make a motion, or we need to come to some consensus on this as to what we want to do. Does anybody wish to?
I'd be ready to make a motion.
Okay, Susan, let's go for it.
You know, I have read the conditions of the resolution, and I feel they're pretty strict, pretty pointed, and they also ask that all the previous conditions be upheld. So I would move to approve resolution number PC 14-20, a resolution of the Morro Bay Planning Commission approval of a major modification of conditional use permit and coastal development permits. Case number MAJ 19-005 of UPO-440 and CPO-500, site location 3300 Panorama Drive.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Do we have a second? Well, I'll second it for discussion. And then let's bring this forward for discussion. I see you're leaning in, Michael. Did you want to?
I just wanted to ask Nancy or Scott, can since the transformer electrical building is being modified, can we ask for its relocation out of the ESHA?
It's not in the ESHA. It's in the ESHA buffer. Half of the building is in the ESHA buffer. And you're asking to move the building?
Well, I was asking about that, yes.
So to move the building would be more disturbance to the ESHA buffer than removing the siding.
Okay, any further discussion on this? Okay, Joseph? You're muted, Joseph.
Sure. I guess this is a question for Scott. And it seems to be related to this. Is your department able to deny a permit based on the credibility of the applicant? I think you suspect what I'm getting at. I mean, if somebody, and I'm not suggesting this is the case, but again, I'm looking to the future, and not even the future of this application, but just of permits in general. Are you able to deny a permit essentially because the applicant is not to be trusted? Is that something
I don't know how you establish that. I mean, people are allowed to submit applications because they own private property, right? So people and or companies are allowed to submit applications. And as long as those applications are submitted in compliance with the city's codes and regulations, we're obligated to issue permits. In fact, we have Permit Streamlining Act requirements for the timeliness of review of those applications. And you have to have really good reasons for denial of projects, basically saying that they're not in compliance with the city's codes and regulations. So to some extent, our hands are tied. When you run into situations where people are bad actors, you have the ability to go down a road where you issue fines all the way up to the point where you take them to court and enjoin them from continuing to operate. But our process in our municipal code is somewhat outdated, and it requires us to issue a warning letter, which is kind of why we never went down the process as it relates to this project or the sheds, because I issue you a warning letter that you need to stop removing the sheds that you removed.
Right.
And then if you continue removing the sheds that you already removed, then I can fine you $100. I mean, it's absurd, right? But that's what our code requires, so that's why we didn't go down that road. Were they to continue to do other things out there, then we could ramp the fines through that process. But ultimately, I mean, I don't know that they're that much of a deterrent, you know, beyond the Planning Commission, when this came back through appeal and you required them to go through a major modification process, which is substantially more money than a minor mod, and it had to come back through this process, plus all the studies that went along with it. I mean, they spent several thousand dollars, you know, for the mistake they made for removing the shed without a permit.
So
outside of the time frame issue.
If there was a theoretical applicant who came to you who had a whole history of on various projects, violating the permit, disregarding the permit, and then on a given project there was a succession of permit violations, you would really be powerless to say, I'm sorry, but we're not going to issue this permit to you because you've never demonstrated
the ability to live up to the
But yeah, they were qualified with like permit to a contractor, and they were, you know, a contractor with license and in good standing, then we would have to issue the permit and just make sure. And we probably, not unlike what we're going to do with this project, is we have people watching over what they're doing. And you keep them on a short leash. I mean, that's about the best you can do, because we are obligated to, we have the process, they come through our process, they comply with it, we have to issue the permits that go along with that.
So any bad faith argument would require a legal battle, you'd actually have to sue them. Okay.
Correct.
Okay, Susan?
I sort of am concerned also that part of the scope of work is the continued removal of something that is hazardous and potentially toxic. We would like that to be gone. That is what they are proposing to do. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, some of the conditions require further study and research of what toxicity may be in the soil. We're really getting something out of this as a community. Whereas if, you know, I don't quite see the point in denying it, because then we're stuck with these ugly, hazardous buildings with no further research on the soil conditions, no further research on what eventually may become a friable asbestos paint situation. This is just this tiny little part of the project. Whatever comes next is going to be a whole new permit, a whole new project, a whole new development plan, which will again have a tremendous amount of community oversight, I am sure. I would hope that we can agree that the new project manager is paying attention to things. He is being respectful of our community.
Susan, let me see if I can jump in on this. Sorry to interrupt. I hope I didn't interrupt too much. But it seems like part of the problem we've had here is we've had off-site owners, we haven't had anybody essentially invest, you know, observing the site on a regularly basis to make sure that things were done correctly. So, Scott, can we put a condition in here that somebody would be appointed as an inspector, such as the environmental inspection, and Michael would be a good candidate for that.
He's going to be the consultant that the city hires to monitor the demolition work on the shed.
Yeah, but what I'd like to see is a weekly inspection of the property to make sure that there are no further occurrences of work being done without the proper permitting. So have somebody as an observer to be able to observe the property at least on a weekly basis to make sure that conditions are being upheld, and we don't have somebody moving into a shed with a trailer. We don't have somebody, if somebody starts to remove one of the sheds without the permits, or starts to do work or digging or whatever there may come up, that at least on a weekly basis somebody would be able to observe the project and then report back to the city that something was being done and a stop work order needed to be issued.
That ought to be a neighborhood watch situation.
Well, I don't know if the neighborhood watch has the ability or has the technical expertise to do that. So I think this should be paid by the owners of the property to make sure that they're in compliance on an ongoing basis until the permit is final.
So I mean, so the project and talking, I mean, the contractor was on here. He said it's going to take 5 days. I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, there's going to be reporting that goes on behind it, but that's environmental analysis. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with the demo. So I'm not really sure. Like, we'll have some. Well, while they're doing demo, Michael Tiffany will be out there because that's what we're going to hire him to do. And then, you know, if it wasn't Michael, it'd be somebody that does what he does, because that's who we would hire to go out there and monitor. I mean, that's the idea there. It's just Michael's the one that's most familiar with it. It makes the most sense to have him be the one that's doing it. But beyond that, I mean, otherwise it's neighborhood they're there. They see stuff that's happening. They let us know about it. Or, you know, we see stuff happening out there and we find out about it. I'm not sure what this person would do or how.
Basically, it's not going to be 5 days till the project's final. There's going to be environmental testing. There's going to be site testing. If it's 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks or if it is 5 days, that's fine. But I think part of the problem that we've got into, and part of the problem that the community is upset about, is things happen and then there's nobody that knows that it's happened until they report it. And so then, so basically there aren't any eyes on the project that are third party.
I mean, we have code enforcement for that. I mean, they could drive by once a week. They already drive through the neighborhood. So, and I don't know that we need to do anything special for that.
Okay. Well,
they would be able to observe that, you know, whether anybody's out there doing anything and whether there's any permits we've issued to do anything out there. I mean, that's fine.
Okay, Jesse, you had something?
Yeah, Scott, hypothetically, if we denied this today and they appealed to city council, would the city council have the ability to levy fines that in excess of what's been already assessed?
We can only issue fines consistent with the municipal code. That's the problem, right? And that's the reason why we didn't go down this road, because I have to, again, the absurdity of me issuing you a warning for sheds that you already removed and telling you you can't remove them, I can't fine you after that because that action's already done. That's the problem. Like, that was, as soon as we find out, that's all we could do is issue you a warning saying don't remove stuff without permits and then take you back through the process, because even though you removed them without permits, you're still required to have the permits. That's the reason we're sitting here this evening. And we made you go through that process. But it's just the way our municipal code is written. The council doesn't have the ability to make up random fines. I mean, they can fine things consistent with what our municipal code and or our adopted fee schedule. Those are the fines we can issue from the city. They can't make them up. We can go to court, you know, and identify damage that was done someplace, and then potentially that can be some amount of money that somebody gets fined for.
Okay, I think we have a motion on the table. Mr. Galivas, I'll allow you to testify at this point.
Okay, thank you. I can't find the wave button, so that's why I'm waving my hand.
Oh, no, that's fine.
So back to monitoring. Again, we're not only sending contractors to do the further work on the electrical room, but I'm personally going to be monitoring all the work that's going to be done. And I know Michael Tiffany has been brought on to do the oversight on the siding removal, but I'm going to be there. I'm actually going into the area and will stay there until the project is completed. And so we're taking all the precautions that are needed to make sure, and I know contractors are contractors, and they are experts, but we feel more comfortable that I even, cross all the T's and dot all the I's to make sure everything is being done. So whatever work's going to be done, I will personally be there to make sure that everything gets done, completed according to the city standards.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. We'll close the public comment again. Okay, so we've got a motion. We have a second. We've had discussion. Would anybody else like to say anything to this, before we call for the vote? Okay, Scott, if you would call the question.
Sure, hold on just a second. Commissioner Stewart?
Yes.
Chair Luer?
Yes.
Commissioner Barone?
Nay.
Commissioner Lucas?
Very reluctantly, yes.
Commissioner Graffia?
Yes.
Motion passes 4-1.
Okay. With a comment on this, that this is closely watched by the community, and stop orders will, I would expect would be issued on a hair trigger basis. So let's get it right this time, guys. Come on, we're grown-ups here. So I hopefully. Okay, well, thank you very much, everybody, and hopefully we can move on from this and make this a better project. Okay, item B is closed. So moving on to item number C, which is new business. We have none. Unfinished business, there's none. So planning commissioner comments and future agenda items. I would just like, you know, Scott, like we mentioned here, and then also looking at the plan list, most of the, you know, a lot of the items are not most of the items, but a lot of the items on the list are, once again, are projects on that list where people are coming back to get permits for work that was done without permits. You know, so we're, you know, going perusing that, I saw several on there, and we're seeing that, once again, most of the problems we deal with are, we're dealing with issues that where people had done work without permits. So once again, I think we really need to tighten up our penalty clauses and people to make sure that people, it's easier for them to apply for permits than it is to ask for forgiveness.
So it's a fair point, Jerry. After, you know, we get through the election process, we'll be going through a 4-year goal setting process, and where the Planning Commission will have the opportunity to sit down with the City Council to go over what things you would like to see happen, and that would be probably the time frame under which to make that move forward. I'm not really sure we could, you know, address it necessarily before that. Although when we go through the fee update process and, you know, prior to the end of the fiscal year. That could also be a time frame when we talk to council about it, I suppose.
Okay, if we could put it on a list somewhere for items to bring up. Does anybody else have anything that they'd like to say to this or say?
I just want to say that, you know, every major project requires an owner that understands the nature of goodwill with the people he's trying to convince, he or she's trying to convince to support the project. And it's absolutely critical that on one of our major parcels here, that there is an extraordinary amount of wisdom put forward before we see anything on that site again. Because this is a really difficult thing to look at passing these small piecemeal portions when things should have been handled with kid gloves on this because of the exposure, because of the seriousness of the materials. And it's to every owner's benefit to do everything right when they're trying to impress a community that there should be something important happening on their site.
Okay, then Scott, community development comments. You have anything?
I thought I was just going to, you know, leave you with the fact that the vacation rental ordinance is moving forward to City Council next Tuesday. So in case you want to tune in, you can see what happens with that. I know the Planning Commission, you spent 2 meetings on it and did some good work there. So all that, I was writing that into the staff report right before the meeting started this evening. So finalizing that, and we'll be seeing where that goes next Tuesday.
And then, Scott, on I talked to you a little bit about it today. Where are we with the EV fast charging stations?
Sorry about that. Thanks for reminding me. I did follow up with Rob Leibig, city engineer, and he indicated that they're working on revisions to the plans because they need to move the EV charging stations over a little bit from where they had initially located them, which I think was on Vistra property. They have they own, you know, one of the lots, the parking lots down there that we use is actually belongs to them. And I think that's where our, that's where previous person in public works that's no longer with the city was, had placed it, or at least right on the edge of their property. And so Rob's working on plans to move that over. So it's on city property and not on Vistra property. So that's where it's at.
Okay, great. Well, thanks for the follow-up on that.
Sure.
Okay, anybody else wish to say anything or have any comments, or are we all? Okay, seeing nothing else, thank you. Thanks, everybody. And, you know, let's, at this point, we'll adjourn for the next regularly scheduled Planning Commission meeting on October 6th, 2020 at 6 p.m. And we will do that through our handy Zoom conferences. Thanks, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Have a good evening.
Bye.